The following program is brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice, and all economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal. Any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any person for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax, and penalties may be imposed on such persons, and each listener should seek advice from their own tax advisor, legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice. Nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Good evening and welcome to Your Money with David Hayes. This is Doug Hughes live in studio covering for David Hayes, who is out enjoying some break time with his family, a little vacation time. And so I am live in studio. I am the captain of this ship. Jim is running the boards and I have a co-captain, Mr. Wayne Thacker. How are you today, sir?
Hello, Professor. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you. What's been going on? What's new?
You know, it's hot.
Yeah.
It's some kind of ozone day. My wife was just telling me. I called her on the way here, and she said it was some kind of no ozone.
No ozone day.
Because we walked outside, and it's, you know, we're cramped up in those little offices all day.
Yeah.
And walking outside, it's pretty steamy out here in Bloomington
today. Yeah, it really is. But you know what? We'll take it as opposed to the alternative. I prefer the warm instead of the cold.
Someone at our office has a pool. I know that we can probably hop in at some point.
We could probably, especially since he's not around. Hey, listen, Wayne, we've had some pretty big news happening this week. Turns out that Donald Trump is the presumptive nominee for the Republican Party, and as of Tuesday night, Hillary Clinton is the presumptive nominee, we're using the word presumptive there, for the Democratic Party. So after the primaries have gone, I think there's one primary left, which is next Tuesday, and I think Bernie Sanders said today that he is going to stay in the race at least through next Tuesday and still claims to be going to the convention in Philadelphia in July. But big news. This
big
is something
news.
After all these primaries and all the news and all the,
you know,
media circuses and everything, here we are.
Politically correct is kind of coming to my mind right now, ironically. But when people come in, we can have our opinions too, and we do. But it's funny, you know, I might get somebody sit down in front of me today. They hate Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. But the very next person, they love Donald Trump.
Sure.
Next person hates Hillary. Then it's vice versa. And then Someone likes Bernie and then someone doesn't. So, you know, we see so many people and talk to so many people daily. It's funny to kind of hear everyone's opinion. And
yeah, absolutely. You know. Well, coming out of the crisis, one of the statements that should ring true with everyone is that banking should be boring. Well, in America, politics is not boring. It is an absolute form of entertainment.
It's become a TV show.
It's great. All right. A couple facts here, Wayne, I thought that came across the wire that was very interesting from the Brookings Institute, that at the end of 2015, only 8 of 50 states have accumulated a rainy day fund equal to or greater than 10% of the state's annual expenditures.
That's
only 8 in 50 have a rainy day fund that is 10% or more of what their annual expenses
are.
That's
shocking. And we're out here telling our clients to, you know, save that rainy day fund, but maybe we should be advising the states.
Absolutely. A little bit more information here. 46% of 5,700 Americans surveyed do not have $400 set aside in cash to cover an emergency expense and would have to sell an asset to borrow $400. This comes to us from the Federal Reserve. What both of these stats tell me, Wayne, is that we're right back to a place where people do not have liquidity, they do not have emergency money, they do not have rainy day funds set aside for the things that come up that are first expected, second unexpected. Tires, that's expected. New tires for your car, that's expected. But unexpected things, like I had the battery go dead in my car and I've been driving someone else's car for 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
It's really something. So people are just not ready for unexpected expenses. And actually, only 8 of 50 states, Jim, have those kind of resources set aside. It goes back to the fact that we really don't spend a lot of time analyzing the cost of the unexpected or the cost that we need to have set aside into reserves. And with that, That's going to be really the emphasis of this show today. We've kind of taken the bull by the horns on this one with David being out of town.
As always.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to have a show a little bit about behavioral finance. So we're going to be talking about turning points in people's lives, new life, new goals. What do you do at graduation, at a career change, and then also at a relationship
Jim's
change?
A young man here. He's sitting with us. Is this show just going to fire him up today?
He can't contain the excitement right now. Look
so
at
happy.
Him over
Look
there.
Look at him just smiling.
Absolutely. Listen, this is Your Money with David Hayes. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Your Money with David Hayes. This is Doug Hughes live in studio. Wayne Thacker is joining me. Today we're going to talk about turning points in your life. And one of the things I know that many people have been going and attending the last couple of weeks have been graduation parties. Wayne, I saw you at a graduation party or two over the last couple of weeks.
Oh yeah, it's been fun. We've been busy the past few weeks.
We've been busy doing that, yeah. And one of the things I think that it's good to spend some time and help people out with is turning points, and one of those turning points in life is when you graduate high school or when you graduate college. What are some of the very first things that people should do? And I think that one of the things that we see for people who are successful, and it's hard to listen to this kind of advice when you're 18 or when you're 22 because it doesn't sound like it's really cool. But one of the first things that you can do is begin to set down financial goals for the next 10 years. Sometimes people have a hard time making financial goals, Wayne, because they're so long term. Every time you talk to a financial advisor, it's, are you in this for the long term, or this is 10 or 20 or even 30 years out? It's hard to think that way when you're, 18 to 22. So one of the things that I always say to people is that one of the first things you should do is establish a savings plan. That 10% of everything that you make from your first check going forward is that you need to be saving at least 10% of the income that you're making.
That's right. You know, I wrote an article recently because we get this question a lot, how much should I be saving? And mathematically, if you're not counting on Social Security or any pensions or anything like that, if you saved 10% of your income for your entire career, that money earns 5%. And at retirement, you're going to withdraw 4% of that. It takes you 51 years to mathematically save enough at 10% savings rate to save for retirement.
Exactly. And so when we're talking to young people, specifically, we say to them, when you have the opportunity, you need to really begin saving right away and make it part of your discipline. Don't let that let time sneak up on you. Say, hey, I'm going to start at 25. I'm going to start at 30. I'm going to start at 35. You're so far ahead of the game. And the power of compounding interest, and if you call our office, 812-334-3190, Comprehensive Financial, we can actually give you the diagram and show you the chart of the people who started saving at 18 and 20 and 25 versus those who waited till they were 25 to 30 to 35. The amount of money accumulated over those years, just those first 5 to 10 years with the power of compounding, it's really exponential. And so we always say when you graduate and you do begin getting jobs, then the first thing you do is need to make savings a real priority. And don't delay. It's the time right now.
Out of sight, out of mind. And if you can establish that plan, put that money somewhere where you can't see it or touch it. If you're a spender, that's fine. Spend the rest of your money. Mm-hmm. But go ahead and start that, establish that savings plan.
Absolutely. The next thing I would say is also when you graduate, and this is particular for our college graduates, you need to be thinking about a debt reduction strategy. If you are coming out of school with student loans, perhaps you have a car payment, different things like that. If you have debts when you're younger, if you can first learn to avoid them, but secondly, if you can have a strategy that will help you to eliminate and whittle down those debts as quickly as possible, you're going to be so much better off than allowing them to just accumulate. You have two things working for you, that one, you know, one working for you, one working against you. The power of compounding interest and growth on one side, but on the other side, you have the power of interest growing against you, and the payments just never seem to go away.
Let's not kid people, Doug. You know, debt is slavery.
Yeah.
If you have it, you've got to continue to work for it and do without certain things because you have that debt.
Exactly. And so when we talk to people who are making these turning points, let's call them, and they're getting out of high school, they're getting out of college, this is a great time to really focus in. Maybe not have a 30-year plan. It's awfully hard to plan for 30 years like that. But to have a savings plan and to have a debt strategy plan. The other thing I would think is say, too, is that there's nothing wrong with having a 30, 40-year plan at that stage to be able to start putting money into a Roth IRA. $25 a month is a minimum you can open up a Roth IRA with, just to get the stream of money going into that and allow it to accumulate over long periods of time.
That feels good. You know, you open up that account statement a few years down the road, and you're like, man, I've saved $3,000 or $4,000.
Sure.
And then that just gets the ball rolling for you.
Absolutely. Let me give one recommendation on a book. There's a lot of books out there that have been written, and I always recommend this book for
Rich Dad, Poor Dad?
No, that's not the one. it's a different one that I always recommend to graduates, both high school and college. The Richest Man in Babylon, written in 1926. It's all about, as it describes, it's a story about the richest man in Babylon, but it's all about how to create wealth, how to stay out of debt, and all these things. Written in 1926, Wayne, long before all the people that we read about today who have made a lot of money and so forth doing these kind of things. So writing books and so forth. But really, The Richest Man of Babylon, a great read, and I recommend everyone. Any thoughts that you have on that?
You know, I really follow the I like Dave Ramsey's message. Mm-hmm. I like the message on being debt-free. Oftentimes, a lot of the people we work with are nearing retirement or at retirement. And what we see is the people that have the less debt on their books have the best retirements.
Absolutely.
And so the debt reduction strategies, however you want to implore those, are just so important. And the earlier in your life you can get rid of the debt, the better.
Absolutely. So here we are talking about turning points, new life, new goals. When you graduate, it's a new life, and you're going to have some new goals. The people who are going to do the best financially are those who know what those goals are and do their best to continue down the path of making those goals reality. And honestly, it sounds kind of preachy. It sounds kind of old, maybe. Maybe this is something that your parents or grandparents would say. But if you're listening out there and you're younger, you do have a new opportunity here to establish some new goals and make some things happen.
Is that just a new opportunity until the next one comes along, Doug?
Wow, because it could be. I don't know, Wayne.
Yeah, we got the path of life we're going to talk about today.
Well, we're going to talk about the path of life as well. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes.
Welcome back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. I'm Wayne Thacker, sitting in studio with Doug Hughes today. Reclaim the cluttered areas of your home with help from Bloomington Affordable Self-Storage on 17th Street. Newly remodeled with 24-hour on-site management, and they offer truck rentals too. Call 812-339-4221. That's Bloomington Affordable Storage.
Absolutely.
Doug, we're back, and we're talking about the path of life today.
A little bit of the path of life. Yeah, that's an old financial planning title and theme presentation. We're talking about turning points, kind of things that change in your life that are turning points. We talked about graduation. We'll spend a little bit of time on career change. The average person in America today, Wayne, changes careers or jobs, let's say, places where they do their career, 7 times.
Wow.
And with those changes come about a lot of different financial decisions that need to be made.
Absolutely.
And some pretty big adjustments sometimes. And so when we talk with people who have these career changes or moving from one place to another, there's a couple things that pop up right away. One of them is, have you had a real good analysis and a real good understanding of the changes in your insurance, whether it's health insurance, dental insurance? Recently, this last week, I've been working with someone who had a big change in their life insurance. They thought it was much less than it was. Unfortunately, the family member passed away. They had no idea how much life insurance that they actually was on their spouse who passed away, and it was actually double what they assumed it was going to be. So really, it goes to show you that if you're not taking very close attention to your insurance changes, that you may or may not be paying too much or too little, and you may not have the coverages that you needed before.
Well, those are definitely important things. That's why we always do the insurance reviews.
Absolutely.
And beneficiary reviews. All of those things need to be looked at on an ongoing basis.
Absolutely. And then let's talk about the retirement account. I mean, boy, if we've talked about that one time, we've talked many times.
Like two or three.
Two or three. When you do have a career change and you go from one place to another, you have a couple options. You can move that current existing 401k into the 401k of your new employer if, that's a big yeah. If they allow that. Or you can roll it out to an IRA and do kind of your own yeah. investment strategy and planning from there. And honestly, what we say to people is that 401ks are used for accumulation. They're great vehicles for that. But if you're looking for some other opportunities that aren't available in the typical 401k, which has several mutual fund type choices, then maybe you roll it to an IRA, and then maybe you do some different strategies that just aren't available.
Yeah, and I was, you know, we work with a lot of schools and governments, and so we do see some turnover from time to time. Someone used to work at this school, now they're at our local school or what have you. And we always kind of let them know, you know, you can leave your old money in the old employer plan. At some point, you're going to want your money, and then you've got to go back and try to get them to sign off on the paperwork. Mm-hmm. And it can be kind of cumbersome to get your money from an employer plan. It's better to do it right when you go away from them, because yeah. you might know somebody in HR or things like that. So there are some little things that you really can't measure financially as well with moving those plans and rolling them over.
The main thing is this: at some point you are going to be asked to make a decision with your 401k. If you leave a place of employment, they'll either call and say, can we manage it for you for a fee? Or they'll call and say, you need to move it along, you're not contributing yeah. anymore. Or they'll call and say, we've, you know, shut off and we're not providing 401k to those employees at that place anymore. You need to make an IRA move. So I would just say to anyone who's out there who's had a career change, if you have an old 401k, get reintroduced to it. Figure out what's going on. Look at the funds. Look at the fees. Are you getting service? Why would you stay with that? Or is there a possibility you could improve your situation by making it a move to an IRA?
Well, and we're talking about turning points. David and I talked about a situation on the show last week as well. But, you know, maybe you got this job. You're just out of college. It's your first job. Great job. You end up working mm-hmm. there a few years. Next thing you know, you're married, but you yeah. don't revisit that 401k. You know, is your spouse listed as your beneficiary? Things like that need to be reviewed. Do you need to update your life insurance with the employer and maybe outside the employer plan? And since we're talking about turning points, I think that kind of fits
Absolutely.
Right in there today.
Let's talk about another thing that happens in that turning point of career change, the change in income. Now, mostly people want to be making more money. And what happens when you start making more money? You know, the first thing that we typically do...
We go buy something.
We go strap on more payments. You know, we get more and more excited about how much more money we can spend. And obviously, people celebrate like that, right? I mean, that's a big deal.
Oh, we see that happen.
But if you're making it on what you're making now, the best thing you can do, again, is go back to the same thing we said to our graduates, and that is begin a debt reduction strategy. Once that's accomplished, begin contributing more money to the 401k. Perhaps you open up Roth IRAs or buy some insurance policies that will allow you to have some long-term care coverage. There's a number of things that can be done. What we always say to people is when you begin making more money, begin making more savings plans, not more spending plans. It's awfully hard to do because, you know, lifestyles are awfully hard to change. And when they start getting better and better, it's hard to imagine going backwards. So when you begin making more money, it's a very good time to sit down with your spouse, your significant other, and just say, let's talk about what we're going to do that we have more money than we had before. Now, that's one side of the coin. Wayne,
absolutely.
As we know, in America, our unemployment rate has been going down. But is it just because people are getting hired? It's because people are getting jobs again. That's wonderful. But it's not unemployment, it's underemployment. I was making... say, for example, $60,000 a year plus benefits. I lost my job. Thankfully, I have a new job, but I'm making $40,000 a year without benefits. These people are in a great deal of danger in what we call the path of life. When most people do financial planning, they pull out the financial calculator, they assume one thing. I'm making 50. I'm only going to go up from here. There's not going to be an interruption. What happens, though, when you have a job change, a career change, a turning point, and your income goes down and your benefits go away? The entire financial plan is all of a sudden thrown into question. And if there isn't flexibility in your financial planning, you may not recover from that direction that's changed.
Doug, you read the stats earlier. There's, you know, half of Americans don't have $400 in the bank.
Yeah, they have to sell an asset to come up with four. That's the Federal Reserve who is telling us that. It's not something that a financial workshop is coming up with. The Federal Reserve is telling us this. There are a lot of people who can't even come up with $400, Wayne. What advice, and I know you've been in the mortgage business, you've done different things. What advice have you given to people over the years that have had these big reductions in income?
Like anything, Doug, the best people are taking care of this stuff up front. You're eliminating debt. You're living on less. You're eating at home. You're driving an old vehicle like you and I do. We brag yeah. about that at the office. You know, you're doing things like that because you're prepping for the future, but you're also kind of creating a little safety net for yourself. Mm-hmm. What if something happens? What if, you know, Doug, you and I, we're vulnerable.
Sure.
What if the financial, you know, things crash or something? I don't know. Right. We could be out of a job tomorrow. Who knows?
Income could drop significantly. I always say to people, whenever you're looking out and you're in the accumulation phase, you need to be prepared to know that things could drastically change. I would love to say that everyone's going to make the same income they're making today and it's just going to increase from here. Wouldn't that be nice?
We know that's
not the case. But unfortunately, it just doesn't happen. So if there is a turning point, hopefully that turning point in the career change means the income goes up. But if that income does not go up, it goes down, there are still decisions that have to be made. Fidelity Investments did a research that came out at the end of last year that two-thirds of investors do not stick with their plan. And here are the reasons why, their financial plan. Here are the reasons why. First, market interruptions, right?
Okay.
The market gets pretty wild, and what do people do? Well, all of a sudden, they're more conservative than they thought they really were. And so then they want to change their allocation. The next thing, why do people not stick with their plan? The next one is a drastic change in income. Because people assume in their financial plan they're going to make the same income and go up. May not be the case, and you have to have some kind of flexibility for that type of planning. And a financial planner who is worth their pay is looking for flexibility in the financial plan. And that is very, very vital because that turning point, should it go that direction, can be very, very devastating. And that's another reason why we say to people, be careful about the debts that you assume, because if things change, you may be able to pay your debts, but not be able to save.
That's right. No, and you see this all the time, Doug, and we're talking about some turning points. We just talked about, you know, someone graduates from high school or college. We're probably going to talk about what happens when you get married, babies.
That's the next segment,
houses,
relationships.
Cars, yeah. You know, those sort of things. So we'll talk about that when we come right back.
Absolutely. New goals for a new life. What happens at turning points? We'll be right back.
Welcome back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. And today, Doug Hughes and I are talking about turning points in people's lives and the different financial decisions you should make along the way. Graduates, marriage, divorce, retirement, those sorts
career
of
change.
Things. Career changes.
Yes. And Jim brought something to my attention during the break, Wayne, that I want to make mention of. If you are employed right now and you don't have a great understanding, this goes back to the career change, if you don't have a real clear understanding about like your life insurance and health insurance, some of these things, you need to go to HR and you need to ask this question, is my life insurance portable? This is very important because, and we'll get to the next segment here in a moment, but if you go from one place of work to another, if your life insurance isn't portable, it doesn't follow you.
That's
right. It doesn't go with you. It ends the day that that employment stops. And so that's why a lot of people choose to have their own individual policies is because that particular policy will stay with you forever. Whereas if you have a policy through work, but then you don't work there anymore, the next thing you know, you're without life insurance. Typically, you're older, perhaps not as healthy. And then if you try to go buy some then because you didn't have to before through work, it's going to be much more expensive.
Or if it is portable and you're not healthy, keep that.
Exactly right. So we go back to the insurance review at a job change, a turning point. It's not just what do I do with my 401k? It's an adjustment to the income change. It's also an adjustment to the insurance change.
Absolutely is.
Let's talk about relationships, Wayne. Everyone's a relationship expert. Did you know that? If you watch social media, everyone posts great things about everyone's a relationship
social media.
Expert. And that's not our goal today. We're not here to be relationship experts. No. But we're here to talk about some new goals when relationships change. So say that two people are getting ready to be married. And they have decided that they're ready to spend the rest of their lives together. They're in love, and the music is playing, and the butterflies are flying, and everything is wonderful.
I remember those days.
You don't remember those days?
No, I do.
They're wonderful. Oh,
I
you
remember
do.
Them.
You do. And so sometimes people tend to neglect some big decisions about money when it comes to getting into new relationships. And so when people begin to get married, there's a lot of things that they need to talk about. One of the things they need to talk about is this our money? Is it our money, his money, my money? What is the approach you're going to use with the checkbook? Who is going to be paying for it? We've been having this conversation around the office the last couple of days is, you know, who pays the house payment, who pays the utilities and all this. We always say to people, at this stage of their life, this turning point, they need to have a very clear conversation. And this needs to be understood as things open up, as the marriage begins to happen, because it's always easy to say, oh, you know, it'll be better. He'll change. She'll change. We'll figure it all out. But you know the old saying, Wayne, women marry men thinking that the men are going to change and they don't. Men marry women thinking that they won't change, and they do, right?
That does happen.
I don't know if that's a correct statement or not, but anyway, the reality is that people change or they don't change, and if you don't have this addressed in the beginning, the cash flow management of the household, very important. So when that turning point comes, you need to be able to have that conversation.
I'm not a relationship expert. I think I've read a few times that one of the major causes of divorce is financial disagreements or money problems.
Financial tension is the term tensions. That's used today.
Ooh,
financial
like
tension
that.
Is the worst.
So you're exactly right, Doug. Get on the same page initially and have those open conversations ongoing. Have that annual review with your spouse, if you will.
And oftentimes, when we sit down and we're talking about a new life with new goals, the goals may not always be the same. But if you're not talking about them, then they just get buried deeper and deeper and deeper into the relationship. And then when they do come out, it's not always pretty. And goals aren't just numbers.
Absolutely
goals
not.
Can be freedom from debt. Goals can be, you know, making things happen that we didn't think were going to be able to happen. And also getting into a new relationship, there's different characters. Let's talk a minute about a second of marriages. Maybe there were kids from a previous marriage on both sides. There's a different cast of characters that are involved. Mom and dad on each side, grandparents. All of these things play into the whole role. So at that turning point, it is so important to spend some time writing goals. Here's one. What do you want to do before you die? What do you want to accomplish in our relationship? What do we want to see? And it doesn't always have to be numbers. Now, listen, we have access to great, great therapists and counselors who we can say to people, listen, if you're having financial tension in your marriage, the therapist, they don't really know probably the dollars and cents. That's not their job. That's our job. Their job is to be able to help relieve some of that tension. So I would recommend to anyone planning to get married or perhaps in a second marriage, or you know, whatever the scenario of the relationship is, feel free to give us a call because we have great referral sources for that kind of
and
thing.
I don't want to beat a dead horse, Doug, but financial tension is almost always created from the debt.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk then about 401ks and life insurance and all this. All of these things must be considered at this new goals for that. If you were single and you had one form of life insurance and now you have a two-income home and you're assuming debt together and there's kids together, life insurance must be measured. It must be looked at. How much do we need? What are we willing to pay for that? How do we value that? The same is going to be true of retirement income planning. How much income are we going to need? We're going to get to pensions and Social Security with you in the second half. But how much is going to be necessary for these things? This is a big adjustment. Here's another one, Wayne. And this is one that we have run into many times in my 18 years of financial planning. It's almost comical because you know when the people sit down what this discussion is going to be like. One will say, I'm aggressive. The other will say, I'm conservative. And as the relationship goes on, when the markets are great, the aggressive one will look at the conservative one and say, see, I'm right. When the markets are bad, the conservative one will look at the aggressive one and say, see, I'm right.
Right.
The point is this. People have different risk tolerances. And risk tolerances should be discussed in financial planning for couples.
Absolutely. That's, you know, we always have both parties come in to see us. We try not to meet with one spouse and then the other. Sometimes that can't be avoided with schedules and things like that, but we always talk about the finances and the retirement planning together.
Absolutely. And when you think about that kind of thing, it is interesting. You know, money could actually be fun for couples. Financial planning can actually be exciting, and it can be reasonable. It doesn't have to be, oh, he or she is trying to put me on a budget. They're trying to take away my fishing pole, or they're trying to take away my new clothes and all these things. It can actually be a lot of fun. And people, if they do it right, at that turning point in their life, can really avoid a lot of the displeasure of money and the way things happen.
It's just another goal. It's just like, you know, you got 10 pounds to lose. It can actually be fun to lose weight.
You get Jim, back did you see how he looked at me when he said that?
Jim did say this was the best show he's ever been a part of.
But he agrees.
It can be fun. It doesn't have to be detrimental to go to the gym. It doesn't have to be detrimental to do financial planning. It can actually be fun.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that that we see quite often is when financial planning is done right, it really leaves a long-term legacy for the spouse who remains and the children. And so I just send this admonishment out to our listeners tonight. Financial planning isn't just about if the Dow is up or the Dow is down, if Fed Chairwoman Yellen raises interest rates next month or she keeps pushing it down the line. It really is, what is my long-term approach to leave my financial assets in the best position for both the people who live on longer
yourself,
than I do?
Yeah,
yeah,
that's right.
And that's what really financial planning should get down to. Guaranteed income streams, markets up, markets down, what's the next hot stock? A lot of that is fun to talk about, but what are the really long-term foundational goals that you really want to have? And when you have a turning point, let's not talk about just people getting together. Let's real quickly talk about when people separate. Not an easy subject, not a happy subject, but when they do, there are financial realities to that. And we always say to people, this is one of the most important times to find counsel, because it's not easy to divide assets when it comes time
and
for
divide
separation.
Divide income streams.
Divide income streams, because then if one person is making more than the other, the Social Security is out of whack. If one person has more in the 401k than the other one does, that's out of balance. Who keeps the house? Should they force the person to maintain life insurance over them while the kids are at home? A lot of things going on there. To all of our listeners, if you're getting ready to go or you're going through this, this is a time to pick up the phone and call a financial advisor, financial planner, call an attorney, and make sure that these things are looked at and evaluated very, very carefully. This is Your Money with David Hayes. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Your Money with David Hayes. Doug Hughes live in studio with Mr. Wayne Thacker. Wayne, we've been talking about turning points, new life, new goals, decision making when, you know, graduation, career change, relationship change. Let's talk about an age change. Let's get into Social Security a little bit. I know that you've been on the program and talked about Social Security and pensions quite a bit. But here's a subject I want you to touch on, and just feel free to talk and tell us about this. I just read the article yesterday that it looks like that there's not going to be a cost of living adjustment in Social Security in 2017. That's kind of an assumption that's going on out there that kind of made the news. Tell us a little bit about what the cost of living adjustment has meant for Social Security, how you have seen it work in people's financial plan, and maybe even some history, some factoids about it.
You know, this was interesting to me.
Because this is a turning point.
You guys asked me to look up some information on the history of COLAs, and I thought to myself, what a boring subject. But as I dove into this and really started looking back at the history of this, it was very interesting. So COLAs with Social Security were introduced in 1975 contractually. So from 1975 to today, the cost of living adjustments are involved with the Consumer Price Index. These are for urban wage earners and clerical workers. So contractually, if there are inflation in the economy from the third quarter of the previous year to the third quarter of the current year, then whatever that increase is in that index is what is going to come extra
on the
Social
Security
check. But
this didn't happen until 1975 contractually.
Contractually.
Prior to 1975, were there cost of living adjustments, and non-contractually just whenever the government decided to do it, I guess?
Yeah, so interesting. Let's talk about this. So Social Security 1935 passed.
Yes.
The first recipient received the first Social Security paycheck on January 31st of 1940, Ida Mae Fuller.
Ida Mae Fuller.
Her check was $22.54. Ida Mae had worked in a Social Security-covered position as a secretary for 3 years.
Okay.
She paid into the system $24.75.
Paid into the system $24, and her first check was $22.54.
Was $22.54.
Wow.
She lived to age 100.
Okay.
Great deal for her.
Yeah.
And ended up collecting $22,888 from Social Security.
On a $24.
On a $24 contribution.
Wow.
So before 1975, the only way that Ida Mae was going to get a pay raise was if Congress got together and actually voted to give this one-time pay raise,
okay,
this cost of living adjustment.
Okay.
It was not contractual until 1975 when they kind of come up with a system to systematize this. So the very first cost of living adjustment happened in 1950. So she got the first check in 1940. It wasn't until 10 years later, she was still receiving that $22.54 check.
Mm-hmm.
In 1950, Congress passed the first COLA. It was a 77% pay raise.
Wow.
So her check went up substantially. There was another one in 52, and then 54, and then 59, and then 65, and then 68. And there was a few more in the early 70s. And then from 1975, Doug, until 2000, let's see, what was it here? It was until 2010. So from 1975 to 2010, there has always been a cost of living adjustment. There was never a zero year.
Wow.
2010, 2011, we had some zeros. 12 through 15, we had some single digits, 1 point somethings, mm-hmm, over those 3 years. And then this year, there was no cost of living adjustment. And like you alluded to, it appears that for 2017, there will not be any cost of living adjustment because the CPIW index is not representing any change yet.
Wow. So, Wayne, what you're saying is that we have our Social Security payments that have entered into retirees' households have actually been going up almost every single year for 35-plus years.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Wow.
That's nice. And, you know, it was the cost of living adjustments were a way to keep your Social Security checks from eroding due to inflation. And they've certainly done that. And there were some big increases. So the 77% increase, there was, you know, that, yeah, was the very first one. Let's throw that one out. But in 1979, the cost of living adjustment was 9.9%. 1980, it was 14.3%.
Wow.
81 was 11%. And if you just look through the history of the cost of living adjustments, you can see there are several sevens and eights and sixes and fives and fours. And then you get to closer to the modern day,
mm-hmm,
and you start seeing the ones
and the twos.
You, yeah, hope, yeah, to see some twos, but
absolutely
a lot of ones recently.
You know, Wayne, Social Security is such a big part of so many people's financial planning toolbox, let's say. Knowing that the history has been very favorable in cost of living adjustments should give people some bit of relief. There's always a lot of concern about Social Security. Will it be here? Is it going away? Is it going broke? All the different things that have been said about it. But really the backdrop of it is, while we haven't had these huge increases, they have been incremental increases that have made a difference for people. And you know, you do a lot of Social Security planning for people. It makes a big difference down the road.
It at least helps cover. So we talk about inflation.
Mm-hmm.
For the older Americans, the biggest inflation piece is the healthcare related expenses. So it at least helps keep up with those additional healthcare related expenses. So
Wayne, when we come back, we're going to touch a little bit further into pensions and cost of living adjustments on those things. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back to Your Money with David Hayes.
That, Is David playing that music?
He might be playing those steel drums. Yeah. I don't know. Listen, you guys did a show about pensions about a week ago, so we would just share it. We're running low on time, so we just share to everyone. Maybe they should take a listen.
If you have
that.
A pension, check out last week's show. David and I hit on pensions and all their topics pretty hard.
Okay, very good. Well, we are waiting for a phone call from David, but it looks as though he may not be able to. Maybe
I think
he
maybe just skipped to the steel drums.
He might have just taken up steel drums there at the pier near the cruise ships or something.
Where is David this week?
I don't know. I don't know.
I don't think
I
it's
saw some fish maybe or something like that. But
I don't think it's going to work. I think he's down on the piers of Destin fishing, and I don't know if he's getting a phone signal down there. But he was going to call in, close the show, talk about next week's show.
I think is Ed Slott. Right?
I think it's Ed Slott next week. David's going to be coming with the America's IRA expert.
Yeah, absolutely. The man who certainly has put together a great, great outflow system. A lot of commentary, a lot of good information, what you really want and need to know about IRAs, which in America now, everyone has a relationship with an IRA.
Yeah, absolutely. And Ed's show, I have seen it on my own TV. So his public service show is playing at least here in Bloomington, at least I had it on my TV.
Absolutely. Well, he's no stranger to this radio show and no stranger to anyone who's followed this radio show. Ed Slott's been doing this for a long time. So it's the kind of show that you need to tell your parents about. It's the kind of show you need to tell your friends at work about. If your friends at work are talking about retiring and what do you do when you retire, this would be a great show to listen into and get some advice on rollovers and distribution
right.
planning.
This show has been fun, Doug.
It has been fun.
We always have a good time. We're always kind of smiling. I don't know if that comes across to people.
Yes.
Jim over here did say this is one of the best shows he's ever heard.
Not just in the last week.
No, in all time. David's going to come next week. He'll analyze the show. He's going to tell us everything we said wrong, did wrong.
David will be fine. Listen, everyone have a wonderful week. It looks like the weather is going to be kind of warm. Think that we're going to have a good summer this year.
I'm going to see you out in the pool, aren't I, Doug?
Probably not. Have a great week, everyone.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.